Hi, this is Russ Taft.
Hi, this is John Olifanti.
Hi, this is John Schlippen-Petra.
Hi, this is Kim Boyce.
Hey, everybody, Stephen Curtis Chapman here, and you are listening to Jesus Freaks Final to Digital.
Hi, I'm Jason Huddle, host of Jesus Freaks Final to Digital. Before we get into this week's program, I just wanted to take a moment to thank you for downloading this episode and giving us a listen. If you really like what you hear, we'd love to have your support. How can you do that, you say? Well, I'm glad you asked. Simply visit patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast and become a monthly sponsor. Now, you can do that for as little as two measly dollars per month, or you can go higher and get special perks, like advance access to episodes when available, the opportunity to submit questions I will ask our artists on future episodes, and even your very own Jesus Freaks t-shirt. Again, that's patreon.com/JesusFreaksPodcast. Patreon is spelled P-A-T-R-E-O-N. And hey, if you'd like your business or organization to become a sponsor of this program, let us know by visiting our website, JesusFreaksPodcast.com, and click on the Become a Sponsor link at the bottom of the page. Now that we've gotten that out of the way, let's get on with the show.
This is David Payton, and you're listening to Jesus Freaks, Final to Digital.
Scott Allen was a member of one of Christian rock's biggest bands, Mylon and Broken Heart, through the 80s and 90s. Today, we talk to Scott about his life and career, and he talks about the day the music almost stopped.
I was in the ER with him when he was being treated, and you have a friend circle, and then you have people that are like brothers to you, and he's always been like a brother to me. So first and foremost, you know, I think the layer of it was just genuine concern for him.
Plus, Scott talks about why, at the peak of their popularity, Mylon and Broken Heart decided to call it quits.
And I think at that point, it wasn't like, okay, I'm done. I can't tour anymore. I can't sing anymore. I think it began a conversation to just say, okay, what's in your heart? Spiritually speaking, you know, where do you see this going? What, you know, and I think we had the opportunity to all see together that it was maybe an opportunity to reimagine what the future looked like.
And will Scott help settle an age-old debate?
So your first technical album, I guess, would have been Live Forever. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. And we recorded that really just like maybe a month or two after I joined the band.
Okay, side question, because I need you to settle a debate that I've had with my best friend for years. Is it Live Forever or Live Forever?
That's all coming up right now on Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, a presentation of Cabco Media Group. I'm your host, Jason Huddle. Welcome onto the program, the world famous rhythm guitarist for Mylon and Broken Heart, Scott Allen. How are you doing, man?
Man, I am doing great, and thanks for overselling that. World famous. I don't know if I can live up to that.
Well, you know what? I think you are. You know, you played all over the world, so that counts for something, right?
Yeah, there's that for sure. For sure.
So, Scott, tell us a little bit, first of all, about your life before Mylon and what led you to being part of that band.
Well, I will try to give you the short version so that this isn't a 3-hour episode. So,
Okay. Yeah,
I grew up in a small college town in the Midwest in Michigan. And really, like when I was about 14 or 15 years old, just had a very real encounter with Jesus. Somebody invited me to come to church with them. And, you know, I realize now that obviously from God's point of view, it was a setup, but probably from my friend's point of view, it was a setup too. And so somebody just shared the gospel that morning, and it was a class of about, you know, 6 or 7 teenage boys. And the teacher was a college student and just shared the gospel, and, you know, it wasn't like a big, you know, cry and come to the altar kind of experience as much as it was just a real awakening for me. I'd always, even as a little boy, been a seeker and had a really interesting encounter with the presence of the Lord when I was about 8 years old that I didn't really know what it was and all of that. So all of that kind of led up to this moment at being about 14 years old where hearing the good news about Jesus and that he loved me and cared about me and that God had a plan for me and all of that just resonated with me. And so I just remember driving home from church that day, riding in the passenger seat of my dad's car. And I can take you to the spot on the street where we were when I just prayed that prayer and asked Jesus to be my Lord. And so I was the first one in my family really to get saved, which was an interesting dynamic. My parents were very supportive of it, but I was the first one and got plugged into a great church and really got discipled. Like guys came around me and taught me how to memorize scripture and had a great pastor in my life who encouraged me and helped me to find myself. And part of that process for me was feeling like I was called to ministry and yet knowing that it wasn't anything typical. You know, like my call to ministry wasn't go to seminary and pastor a church. It was, I really felt like there was an evangelism thing that was attached to it and that there was music attached to it. And, you know, there was an emerging Christian music scene at the time on the West Coast, Larry Norman, Randy Stonehill.
Oh, yeah.
Those guys, Love Song, you know, there were some kind of inklings of maybe what I was called to do. But so I talked to my pastor. I was about 15, maybe. And I talked to my pastor and said, "Hey, I feel like I'm called to ministry and this is what I'm called to do." And fully expected him to go, "Oh, no, that's for other people. That's not, you know, you're not qualified." And he just said, "Yeah, it sounds to me like God's calling you into the ministry."
That's incredible.
And so I, you know, started writing music as a teenager and just kind of did a solo acoustic thing and traveled around Michigan and did youth groups and conferences and that kind of thing and realized that God had more for me than that. And when I was 18, got the opportunity to join one of my favorite bands at the time who had just really had an impact on me and helped me to realize, yeah, this is what I want to do. At the time, they were called Found Free, and later they became Bash in the Code.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's weird. Okay. So I didn't realize you were part of them.
Yeah. So I was with them for about 2.5 years and really learned a lot about ministry, learned a lot about the craft, learned a lot about, you know, traveling and music industry and all of that, being a part of that. My wife Debbie and I were college sweethearts, and we had a long distance romance and long distance engagement during that time. And so we got married, and I came off the road, and I realized this is a long story. I'm so sorry, bro.
No, that's okay. It's we got time. Go ahead.
But in the process of all of that, just really wanted to devote myself to learning how to be a husband and to our marriage and all of that. So I came off the road, and shortly after that, just had a very unique encounter with somebody who either was a very prophetic person or, you know, I don't know if it was an angel or what it was, but whatever this was, I had never met this person before in my life. And they walked up to me on Myrtle Beach and called me by name and asked me how I was doing. And I thought, okay, that's kind of odd, you know? And so, you know, I kind of gave the typical surface pat. Oh yeah, I'm doing all right. Yeah. This is my wife, Debbie. We just got married, and I was producing Christian television in South Carolina. And so I just kind of told him a little bit of the story. And he just kind of laid this absolutely, like, read my mail and just said, "Listen, God's not done with you with music. He's not done with you with evangelism. Your greatest days are ahead of you. And you need to call Mylon right away. He needs a guitar player." And that was like, this is the weirdest the weirdest conversation, but yet there was something about it I couldn't shake, you know, and Debbie and I were in the car and I said, what was that? Was that, and she said, I think you just need to call and see. So I called, it was over a weekend, called Monday morning.
Now, did you sure already know Mylan at this point?
We met a couple of times doing different Christian music festivals and stuff. And I just really felt a kinship with those guys and loved what they were doing. And it was so, such a unique expression of ministry and yet like real rock and roll and real great, solid pop music and all of that. So all of it just kind of resonated with me. So yeah, we had met when I was touring with, at the time, Found Free. And so short story of this is, you know, I ended up going from South Carolina to Atlanta with Debbie over the weekend and met Mylan, met the guys in the band, and, you know, I was going to have an audition and ended up just being like this conversation that was like this 5 or 6 hour conversation where it was like we'd known each other all of our lives and really almost kind of a serendipitous moment where we just, it's solidified in our hearts that we felt like that's what God had for us. And so then we went to dinner with Mylan and his family, and he was introducing me to everybody as his new guitar player. So
I guess you got the job.
I'm not conservative, I'm asking you to be. But I don't think that you should try to be like me. You must make up your mind. What are you gonna do? You would have to be a fool to not see what is true. You gotta love God, that's it. Refuse to lose, live to win. Love God, that's it. You better love God, that's it. Refuse to lose, live to win. Love God, that's it.
So yeah,
did you ever play for him, or did was he just familiar with you from the festivals and stuff?
He remembered me from those days and really liked our band and liked what we were doing and kind of vaguely remembered. And so the audition tape that I sent in kind of, I guess, kind of jogged his memory and everything, but we just really hit it off. And so I found out, you know, the same time the server did at the restaurant that I was his guitar player. And we just really kind of became lifelong friends. It's like almost like we had grown up together or known each other all of our lives, and there was an age gap and none of that mattered. And it was just, it was a really cool friendship that was connected in a really cool God kind of way, just from the first few minutes.
Are you guys still close?
Very close. Yeah. We talk all the time. We don't live that far from each other. We live about 10 minutes from each other. And so, you know, we'll go out for tacos every now and then or whatever, but we talk quite often and, we're still good friends.
Maybe you could get him on the show for us. I'm just kidding.
You know what? I don't know that I'm your pitch guy.
I'm just messing with you. So what about, what year is this that you joined the band?
That would have been 83.
So this is before or after More came out?
The More album had been recorded and was not yet out. So the first actual show that I did with Mylan was kind of the beginning of the More tour. So, I didn't record that album, but that was the beginning of my touring was More.
So your first technical album, I guess, would have been Live Forever. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. And we recorded that really just like maybe a month or two after I joined the band.
Okay. Side question, because I need you to settle a debate that I've had with my best friend for years. Is it Live Forever or Live Forever?
Yes.
I don't know what to say to that. I was hoping to get an answer.
Yes, it is. I've always just referred to it as Live Forever, but there obviously is the potential for the play on words, and especially because, you know, it really was the first Christian album that I'm aware of that had an altar call on it and all of that. So, and knowing, you know, the focus on evangelism and all of that, I think it was a very intentional play on words. Yeah.
That was such an incredible live album, especially to be recorded. I guess it was like 83, 84 when that was recorded.
It was 83. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, for the time of the technology, it was just an incredible live album. I wish, in fact, I just bought it. I got it off eBay. I got it's still sealed. I haven't opened it. It's still got the manufacturer's seal on it.
Nice. So
I don't want to open it, but it is an incredible album. I wish that it was on available digitally or whatever, because it was, that should be shared with the masses. That's a side.
Thank you for saying that. It's very special to me because it was my first album with Mylon.
So, and where was that recorded by? Was that at Creation Fest? Is that where you guys recorded it?
No, it was recorded in Atlanta. We did these Monday night concerts. There was us and a handful of other artists that we were all kind of a ministry tribe, and we would do these Monday night outreach concerts at our church in Atlanta. And so really it was recorded there. The cover was shot at the Creation Festival right around the same time we recorded the album, because we knew it was coming. But yeah, it was live from the Mount Perrin Church gymnasium, like the absolute worst place to record a live
You're
album.
Kidding me. Like, no. I always assumed that was recorded outside. It was recorded in a gym.
Yep. Absolutely.
Wow. Now I'm even more impressed with that sound engineer. Like, that's incredible. The acoustics must have been terrible.
I'm sure it was horrendous. But our producer and engineer at the time he passed this past year, but he was a world-class engineer and worked on everything from ZZ Top to you name it. I mean, Stevie Ray Vaughan, and he worked with lots and lots and lots of artists, and he was just a master at his craft. And I actually learned music production from him.
Very good. So, favorite Mylon story?
Is that a question or a statement?
I'm asking.
You're asking. Oh my gosh. How can you pick one favorite story?
You can give us a couple. That's fine.
I think I could give you a handful of stories that are all pretty similar.
Okay.
And, you know, I think you witnessed one of those, and that is Mylon was and is extremely committed to preaching the gospel. He's an evangelist at heart, and yet great singer and great songwriter, and obviously a consummate performer and all that as well. But I just remember so many times, and at the time I joined him, I was 21, maybe. And so even though I'd been on the road for a few years with another band, it really was like they were formative years for me. And I just remember so many times we would be at an outdoor festival and the power would blow, or we would be doing an outreach on the beach in Panama City and it would just start pouring down rain. And yet Mylon always found a way, regardless of what was going on with weather, with power conditions or whatever, he always found a way to share his testimony and to love on people and to fulfill his ministry no matter what was going on around him. And it really, it marked me in a very, very positive way that here's a guy who knows who he is, and he knows what he's called to do, and he knows why he was sent to this city, and he's just going to get it done. And those are like some of my fondest memories of being with him, and you know, I mean, dozens of those kind of memories, but they all have that kind of common thread to them.
No water. Man.
Were one of the biggest bands of Christian music in the 80s and into the early 90s. Did it ever get mundane for you or I don't, you know, tiresome, cumbersome?
Well, yeah, I think like anything, it's a unique proposition because what never got old was, you know, praying with people at the end of the concert, seeing teenagers giving their lives to Christ. And, you know, and incidentally or not so incidentally, I mean, I'm still meeting people who have been pastors of churches for 30 years who go, you know what, I got saved at that concert. Or, you know what, I saw myself in, I was already saved, but I saw myself in ministry doing what you do. And, you know, my current boss, my current oversight, the pastor that I served, is one of those guys. Wow. Who was at one of at that event that I mentioned in Panama City that got rained out, and so for that part of it never got old to me. As an artist, the proposition that's always a little difficult is that you spend 6 months, a year, however long, writing an album, and then you go to record it, and then there's time that passes, and by the time it comes out, you're ready to kind of move on to the next project, and yet you're just beginning the tour.
Yeah, now you got a tour.
It's fresh to everybody except the artists themselves. And so I think if there's a hurdle to overcome, it's finding freshness in the music every night.
Sure.
And for me, it was, you know, honestly getting to share it with an audience and participating with them and enjoying them hearing it for the first time or reminiscing about, you know, if it was an older song, reminiscing about how that song had touched them or whatever. And I think, Being a performer, you have that vantage point of being able to connect with people in the audience, and you see what the music means to them or how it's touching them, and so that always breathes fresh life into it too.
I have heard rumors that Mylon was very particular about about his music. Can you shed some light on that?
Man, that is just like the widest open question.
I gave you a lot of leeway in that one.
You did give me a lot of leeway on that. Well, I will say that when he started into the ministry and started making albums that were had the gospel in them and very Christian focused in purpose, that was far from his first rodeo. It was about his, you know, 10th or 14th rodeo, you know, if you count sure. growing up in a Southern gospel family and then, you know, being a solo artist. And, you know, he had the privilege and really like kind of a ringside seat for rock and roll in the 60s and 70s. And so, you know, the who's who of his friendship circle, even, but the people that he toured with, I think any artist who's seasoned and has been around for any length of time, especially being exposed to the best of the best, and they're your friends and they're who kind of inform your standard for your albums and how you perform and all of that. I think he came into the season that we know as Milan and Broken Heart, or Milan Lefevre and Broken Heart. He came into that with the bar having been set very high. And so I don't know what rumors you've heard. I don't put a lot of stock in rumors, but I will say that he asked a lot of himself, and he asked a lot of those of us that were a part of it, and rightfully so, because I think there's something about the excellence of the way that you do things that goes from not being a distraction to being a help. You know sure. what I mean? That it helps people to find the message, and it helps people to feel what you're trying to get across to them if the music isn't a stumbling block or the production isn't a stumbling block. And so sure. that's my answer to that. I would say, yeah, he was very particular, but I think it helped us all to set a very high standard for ourselves.
Okay. Is there a particular Milan and Broken Heart song that is still, that earworm still starts cycling around and you start singing it every now and again?
You know, I don't know, because it seems like a lifetime ago. And I guess probably the best way for me to answer that would be to say, you know, I'll see somebody post a video of a live show, or, you know, a TV taping that we did or whatever. And it's almost like rediscovering it, and you just forget, you know, over time. And so it's like being reintroduced to it. So for me, it's rather than it being necessarily a song that comes up, you know, just because I can't get it out of my head, it's almost like getting reintroduced to it, or a memory will come up, or I'm talking to a friend on Facebook. You know, Carol Ford is one of those people for me who she had a group called Sevenfold, and they sang background vocals for us some, and they were one of the artists that were part of our ministry tribe. And Carol wrote a song called For My Growing. And so Carol is just the real deal. And she's always been a great songwriter and just an amazing singer, and just sang and with such heart. And there was such ministry value in everything that she did. And so, you know, every now and then Carol and I will chat with each other, and it just I'll be reminded of that song and just how deep it is. It's a great song. I just need to feel you near me, Jesus. Although I missed in these songs like a man out of bones, you hear the songs that
you're doing now. I guess it was early 90s, 92, 93. I'm pretty sure Mylon had had a heart attack. And then that was it. The band was done. What was it like to have that conversation after, I guess at this point, you've been at it for about almost 10 years. You personally have been part of the band for almost 10 years. What was it like to have that conversation?
Well, there's a lot of layers to it for me. First and foremost, you know, I was there when that cardiac event happened. I was with him in the room when it happened. I was in the ER with him when he was being treated. And, you know, you have a friend circle, and then you have people that are like brothers to you. And sure. He's always been like a brother to me. So first and foremost, you know, I think the layer of it was just genuine concern for him in that season. And he's just such a champion, like in so many ways. Like, we were on our way to a Christian music festival. He has this cardiac event. We stop at the hospital. He gets treated and released, and the next day we're doing a show at a Christian music festival. And nobody knew, except obviously we knew, and I knew because I was there with him through it. And I think at that point it wasn't like, okay, I'm done. I can't tour anymore. I can't sing anymore. I think it began a conversation, particularly between me and him, the board of directors of the ministry, and all of that, to just say, okay, what's in your heart? You know, what is in your, obviously we knew literally what was in his heart was, you know, there was some little bit of damage, but spiritually speaking, you know, where do you see this going? What, you know, and I think those of us who were in his, for lack of a better word, circle of influence, I think we had the opportunity to really to all see together that it was maybe an opportunity to reimagine what the future looked like. And so that actually was during the Crank It Up era when all that was going on.
Right.
At that time, I think, without going into a lot of detail, I think it just became obvious that it was time for a new season for a lot of the guys. And so kind of the first iteration of reinventing, or what does the future look like, was Mylon really kind of starting out to do a solo project that ended up being kind of just a group of friends. So it was Mylon Lefevre and friends, you know, Ricky Skaggs and Stephen Curtis Chapman and Michael W. Smith and all those people. Yeah. So really, I mean, all of that happened as kind of the first wave of reimagining. And then, you know, I think from there, it wasn't just a cut and dried, okay, we're done, as much as it was just trying to recognize that maybe the season was changing, and that what he really wanted to do is he really wanted to travel and preach. So it was an opportunity for us to gear shift. And even though we weren't doing band dates anymore, I continued to travel with him for another 4 years after that, and, you know, helped him to transition his ministry to what he's doing now, moved from Atlanta out here to Texas. And so for me, that wasn't the end of the road, and still isn't, obviously, because we're still connected. But that was a really long answer to your question.
No, that's fine. It was thorough. I appreciate that.
Thorough. Nice way of saying, yeah, you make them not shorter.
Not at all. Listen, I want to know, you say you toured with Mylon after and helped him get things going, but what are you up to now? What have you been doing since?
Well, really, we moved to Texas in 95. And since that time, really have been doing church ministry, local ministry. Some of it focused on worship, some of it focused on, you know, technical or communications or different things that were in my wheelhouse. And where it's led me to now is, I am on staff at one of the campuses of Gateway Church, okay, here in Dallas-Fort Worth. We have a campus in Justin, Texas, and I'm on staff at that campus, and we're literally right across the street from Texas Motor Speedway. So involved in several things, but kind of the ramp leading up to that was, you know, was involved in another church, and then coming on at Gateway was involved in worship. I'd kind of laid guitar aside and started playing guitar again about 6 years ago. And so, you know, through worship ministry at Gateway, you know, have gotten to play with Carrie Jobe and her husband Cody and Rita Springer and Mark Harris, who was a founding member of For Him, and Mark is on staff at Gateway now as well. Crystal Lewis, Danny Gokey. So it really like kind of came full circle for me, even though it's been local church ministry focused. And now what I'm doing pastorally really is focused in care ministry and doing outreach.
It's incredible, man. Where can people find, if they want to, or if they're interested in Gateway or any of those ministries, where can they go?
Yeah. Gatewaypeople.com. So gatewaypeople.com, or if you search for Gateway Church on Facebook, each campus has their own Facebook group, as well as, you know, pages and all of that. Our pastor, Robert Morris, is on television a lot. An amazing teacher and an amazing leader. So gatewaypeople.com is the best way to find it.
Wonderful. Scott Allen, current pastor and former guitarist for Mylan and Broken Heart. Thanks so much for spending some time with us today.
Yeah, man. My pleasure. It's great. Great to reconnect with you.
I'd like to thank again David Payton and Scott Allen, former members of Mylan and Broken Heart, who have been with us the past couple of weeks. Really enjoyed talking with them. And next week, our first female guest, founding member of the all-female Christian rock group, Rachel Rachel. Jennifer York will be on the program, and we are looking forward to our conversation with her. To take us out this week, Scott Allen's only song doing lead vocals for Mylan and Broken Heart, it's Modern Man off the Face of the Music album. You've been listening to Jesus Freaks Vinyl to Digital, a presentation of Cavco Media Group. It is hosted and produced by yours truly, Jason Huddle, with special thanks to research assistant Kevin Jewell. Until next week, God bless.